Tonight we're going to speak about and dispel the evolutionary dating timeline. The idea that the world is, well, they started off millions of years, now they're billions of years. I've been assessing where we are going through this topic, and I'll tell you there's plenty of things that I wanted, subtopics under the idea of creation versus evolution that I wanted to get to that we're not going to get to. There's a topic of mutations, things like that. We could be here for the next 10 years of Thursday nights, and we're not going to get to it all. So we're gonna hit some of these very most come across aspects of evolution. Last week we talked about natural selection, which is the bedrock, really, of evolution. And then this week we're going to talk about the age of the earth. And as Christians, we believe that the age of the earth is somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 years old. And you say, how can we know that? Well, there's those parts of the Bible that you nod off to sleep in are the genealogies in the Bible. And the Bible gives us a very, very clear timeline. And we believe every word of the Bible is true. And if you follow those timelines, we can figure that there were different, you know, it would say so-and-so last lived so many years and then begat so-and-so. And that person then lived so many years and then begat so-and-so. And we can do a lot of math and figure out that it's somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 years old. So really, not that old. So where do they come up with now billions of years? So we're going to get into that this evening if everybody's got your handout. So with the theory here, the idea is that the universe is billions of years old and probably is the major evolutionary myth that is used to contradict the Bible. Because if the earth is billions of years old, like I already stated, the Word of God gives clear genealogies saying otherwise. The Word of God gives clear indication, and if you map it out, it'll show you that it's not that old. So they can say, well, the Bible is just a book of myths, because it says the earth is only a few thousand years old. Before Darwin published the Origin of the Species in 1859, doubt of the Bible began to spread. We talked about this gentleman, Charles Lyell, and he spoke of the uniformitarian geology and claimed that the earth is, at that time, millions of years old. Lyell taught that the earth's rock layers were laid down gradually over millions of years rather than in a global flood. To quote here, Principles of Geology, that says the revolution from young Earth to old Earth was the snowball starting the whole avalanche that eventually changed mankind's entire worldview. This is where it started. It is starting from saying, hey, well, if the Earth isn't a young Earth, if it's very old, at that time, speaking in millions of years, now, the more problems you point out with evolution, just the more years they add to it. You say, hey, there's a hole here. There's no way that could have happened. They say, okay, let's add a few billion years, because somehow, in those billions of years, it probably could have happened, or so they think. Lyell was as much a Bible hater as he was a geologist. He was a geologist by profession, but his objective was to destroy the authority of the Genesis record. This isn't just something that I'm making up. It's not something I'm making an assumption based off of his position. But Lyell hoped to use his theory to drive men, and this is his quote, out of the Mosaic record. He said, my goal is to drive people out of the Mosaic record. Obviously, that is Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, but Genesis specifically pertained to his area of expertise, so-called. The theory of evolution requires long periods of time for creatures to change, and it's convenient that nobody in this room or ever outside of God has lived for billions of years. So how do you know it didn't happen? You weren't there. Sorry? Yes, God was there, yes. So what they started using, and there's this topic, and I just want to lay some introductory groundwork, and then we're going to get into 6 points of the problems with this. Radiometric dating was invented in the 20th century and was alleged to provide absolute results, to absolutely prove that this old age theory was correct. This was it. W.F. Libby actually received a Nobel Prize in chemistry in 1960 after he discovered what he referred to as carbon-14 dating, or often shortened to carbon dating. Now, to give a little bit of background on this and get you to understand this, is that radiometric dating is based on the principle that an unstable isotope of an atomic level decays at a set rate to form a stable element. The original isotope is called a parent, and the ending one is called a daughter. And so they talk about parent isotopes and daughter isotopes. An isotope is the form of an element, such as carbon and oxygen, and that has a different number of neutrons. Each chemical element consists of atoms that are made up of 3 parts. Now, I had to think way back to science class, remember these 3 parts. They are protons, neutrons, and electrons. 3 parts to that atom. Carbon, one of the most common elements in the universe, has 6 protons, 6 neutrons, and 6 electrons. Therefore, it is stable. But carbon-14 has 8 neutrons. Therefore, it is an isotope. So it has too many neutrons. And with too many neutrons, carbon-14 is unstable, so it decays or adjusts to become stable, turning it into carbon-12. Carbon-12. In my opinion, if there were 6, 6, and 6, I was sitting here thinking, why isn't it carbon-18? The math didn't add up for me. But by losing its 2 extra neutrons, the rate of decay can be measured. You can measure this rate of decay. And unstable isotopes are radioactive, meaning they eject neutrons and protons. This process can be measured by what is commonly referred to as the Geiger meter, a Geiger counter. And the adjusting process is called radioactive decay. Radioactive decay. A measurable amount of carbon-14 is in the Earth's atmosphere. Plants take it in to produce energy through photosynthesis. Animals then consume carbon-14 by eating plants or other plant-eating animals. So whether you're eating a salad or you're eating a cow who ate the salad in the form of a cheeseburger, you consume carbon-14. I consume carbon-14 today. When plants and animals are alive, the carbon-14 to carbon-12 ratio is a steady 1 part to 1 trillion. So every trillion carbon-12 parts, there's 1 part carbon-14. And when plants and animals die, they stop taking in carbon-14. They're not consuming any energy. You don't eat when you're dead. And the amount of carbon-14 begins to decrease through the process of decay, and a process scientists can measure. That's where we get into the topic of half-lives. Carbon-14 has a half-life of 5,730 years, meaning that in that time, half of it will convert from carbon-14 to carbon-12. You say, that's a long time. Yes. And then after 2,865 years, half of the remainder will be converted. After 1,432 years, half of the remainder will be converted, etc. In 100,000 years or less, there should be no carbon-14 left. It will half itself out. Since most rocks don't contain carbon, geologists use different types of isotopes to date those rocks. Oftentimes, the carbon-14 dating method is referred to when speaking about the age of rocks, but they don't contain it. So uranium decays into lead. Actually, different types of uranium decay into different types of lead here, potassium into argon, etc. And these isotopes are found in igneous rock, which refers to rock made from cooling magma or lava on the earth. So, with this, we have their solid, rock-solid proof that they can go and they can find a fossil. They can find anything, whether it's a rock with their isotopes or anything that ever had a living, was a living organism, and they can tell you how old it was based off of carbon-14 dating. Well, there's some problems with that. This doesn't like me. There's some problems with that. First of all, and we're going to look at each of these six problems. Every evolutionary dating method is built on evolutionary assumptions. Every single dating method, every single one of these where they sit down and they say, well, we can see this, this, and this because, well, they already believed evolution going into it. That's fallacy number one. Fallacy number two is evolutionary dating has been refuted by their very own carbon-14 dating methods. So carbon-14 testing has actually not proven evolution right. It's proven them wrong. It only proves them right when they manipulate the inputs. And then thirdly, evolutionary dating methods give widely different results. We're talking like a million years different. This just doesn't like me right at this point in the PowerPoint. The number four, evolutionists are selective in choosing dates. Most dating methods point to a young Earth. We could be here all night talking about proofs of a young Earth. There's just whether it's carbon-14 or any other different ways you measure it. There's so much evidence that we don't live in an Earth that's been around for even a million years, let alone hundreds of millions and billions of years. And then sixthly, biomaterials in quote-unquote ancient fossils, even those point to a young Earth. So looking at the first one, every evolutionary dating method is based off of evolutionary assumptions. I'm going to put it right here. There's a picture of a book that I used in my study that a fundamental fact about radiometric dating methods that make them undependable is that they are built on unproven evolutionary assumptions. At the basis of these radiometric dating methods that are used to claim that the world is, or a certain fossil is, millions or billions of years old, there are some very, very clear methods. And there's Dr. Snelling, PhD in physics, lists these out here. First one is these are assumptions. Assumption number one that they make is the original number of unstable atoms can be known. So they're just going to assume that they know the number of carbon-14 atoms that were in said fossil or whatever they're studying. Scientists assume how many unstable or parent atoms existed at the beginning based on how many parents and daughters or daughter atoms are left today. Problem with that, they can make up any number. You're not using this breakthrough of carbon-14 dating, you're manipulating it. Second, the rate of change was constant. They assume that the rate of carbon-14 to carbon-12 radiometric decay never changed. They assume that the radioactive atoms have changed at the same rate throughout all of time, ignoring impacts of creation or even changes during Noah's flood. There's a lot of evidence that this probably occurred at a different rate before the flood. It was a very different world before the flood. Things grew to much larger sizes. I don't know. I don't see my wife here. She's probably taking care of our children. But I don't know that she could handle the size of insects that existed before the flood. I mean, have you seen the fossils? Dragonflies with 15-foot wingspans? It's incredible. Incredible. But they're making this assumption in order to date the Earth at a certain billion, and it always changes. If I said evolutionists are claiming it's 16 billion years old today, we'll wake up tomorrow and it'll be 17.5. They change it all the time. But with that, there are these assumptions that there were no variations in the rate of change. And then thirdly, they assume that the daughter atoms were all produced by radioactive decay. Scientists assume that no outside forces, such as flowing groundwater, ever contaminated a sample. We know that's not the case. Even today, when you have a forensic team that comes to a crime scene, they're going to have a very short window where they say, "Hey, within moments, within hours, they want to be able to test certain things before natural elements, especially the crime scenes outside, will take its toll and will damage the crime scene." Scientists try to remove variables as best as they can, but it's impossible for them to know conditions that existed in the distant past. The assumptions remain unproven, so the science remains uncertain. At best, their quote-unquote evidence is uncertain and unstable. They assume that there was no literal six-day creation a few thousand years ago, and that there was no global flood. Thus, they make no attempt to understand how these events might have affected the atomic elements and their decay. They say that their dating methods prove there was no recent creation, but they base their methods on the assumption that there was no recent creation, and tune their dating systems and really manipulate those dating systems accordingly. This is circular reasoning, and it proves nothing. Burning a candle, an example from John Whitcomb. Example uses two assumptions. Assumption one is the assumption that the starting point, or the original condition, where you see this candle here, where did it start? How tall was the candle? How short? What was it here? Was it way up here? If Ezekiel or somebody taller, it could reach even higher? Well, we don't know. So in order to say how long that candle's been burning, you have to assume the original point or condition of said candle. Secondly, the second assumption is an assumption of a uniform rate of change from that start point to the present. Well, we don't know if when it started up here, even if we knew that, if halfway down a wind blew and for a couple of days it was blown out and then somebody came by and struck a match and lit it up again. We don't know that the rate of change was the same from the start point to now. So consider burning a candle in an abandoned house. It's now burning at the rate of 1 inch an hour. How long has it been burning? Thus, how long was the house abandoned? We don't have all the parts of that information. We can't. It's an unsolvable equation. You're going to have an unknown there. The answer clearly is no one can know until it can be shown how high the candle was when it was lit, whether the rate of burn has been consistent. So that leads us to the question of how old is the earth? No one can know unless it can be proven what it was like when it began and how rapidly it changed since then. Obviously, we can know because the Bible makes that clear. Another example is the hourglass example. And it's from the New Answers book. And the following example shows that the radiometric dating relies on basic, unprovable assumptions. If we walk into a room and observe an hourglass with sand flowing from top to bottom, we could calculate how long ago the hourglass was turned over. We would need to estimate how fast the sand was falling and then measure the amount of sand at the bottom. But we could still be wrong because the formula is based on a certain assumption that might be incorrect. It assumes the following. There was no sand at the bottom when the hourglass was first turned over. That's assumption number one. We don't know that if we just are seeing what we see now. Another assumption it takes is that no sand has been added or taken out, and that the sand has been falling at the same rate. I remember when we were kids, I'll say kids, definitely didn't lead into teenage years and adulthood, but we'd be playing games. You ever play a board game, Brother Mike, with your family, and there's really these hourglass timers? And so when it's your turn, you want to protect it. You want the sand to go through as slowly as possible. But man, when the girls are on the clock, you're shaking it, you're smacking it, you're trying to get it to go down faster. And there's just variables that if you walk in and you see this hourglass right here, yes, you can measure. Yes, you can make an assessment. But those are all based on these assumptions. Likewise, an evolutionist assumes that he knows the conditions that existed at the formation of rocks that he is testing. He assumes a uniformitarian process since then, and other things he does not know, but that are necessary for accurate dating results. So, evolutionary dating methods are based on evolutionary assumptions. And evolutionary dating has, this is point number two, evolutionary dating has been refuted by carbon-14 testing. Here's where I think it gets a little bit fun. Carbon-14 dating systems actually disprove, it's a great book, by the way, disprove evolution's millions of years doctrine. This was proven by the RATE project, the Radioisotopes and the Age of the Earth project. The project was conducted by a team of 8 PhD scientists between 1997 and 2005. That sounds like a long time ago to some of the younger people here, but that wasn't that long ago. Scientists tested various radiometric dating systems, and the project was summarized in 2 volumes, Radioisotopes and the Age of the Earth, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Quoting from this, the results of the carbon-14 dating demonstrated serious problems for long geological ages. It continues to go on to say samples were taken from 10 different coal layers that, according to evolutionists, present different time periods in the geological column. So 10 different layers of coal that have already been tested by evolutionists and claimed to be from millions of years apart. The coal's samples, which date to hundreds of millions of years based on standard evolution time estimates, all contain measurable amounts of C14. So, well, you see, confusion here is coal is organic. It's not a rock. It's an organic material, so it does have carbon. So had a measurable amounts of C14. Since the half-life of carbon-14 is 5,730 years, there should be no detectable carbon-14 left after about 100,000 years, which means even without looking at the specific numbers, we know that that coal is not hundreds of millions of years old. It's actually less than 100,000 years old. This has been confirmed by the best carbon-14 dating laboratories in the country. So their great methods proved them wrong. Going back to Dr. Snelling here, he is quoted saying, the best laboratories in the world using the best equipment under the cleanest conditions over the last 3 decades have been routinely finding measurable radiocarbon in coal, oil, natural gas, limestone, fossil bones, fossil shells, and even diamonds. If these were all millions of years old, there should be no radiocarbon left in them at all. The fact that these materials yield radiocarbon dates of only thousands of years. All of this is documented in scientific literature, such as the journal Radiocarbon. I did not take the time to read that scientific journal. I'm going to take his word for it. He can read it. I picked up a medical journal one time and read about 2 paragraphs, and I was confused. There's certain people that are educated to a point where they understand that I'm not. But he continues to say, so there's a great amount of evidence that the Bible is right, after all, about the Earth's age. Dr. Snelling is a Christian, but he's dedicated his life to this study. And it's shown time and time and time again, even if they find even just a little bit of carbon-14 in any of these fossils, what they're saying is these fossils' age is thousands of years. There is an impossibility for it to be any older than 100,000 years. Number 3, evolutionary dating methods give widely different results. I was grading a quiz today, from some of our young people. They were taking a quiz on U.S. history. They're studying Constitution 101. And in that quiz, I look at Brother Ed. He was a teacher. Some of you guys have taught classes. You ever get a class of 10 to 20 students and every single one of them have a different answer? What we're going to say is they're not all right. But although every one of them having a different answer cannot be saying the same thing. So if you have a math problem, 8 plus 5, and one person says 14, one person says 16, and one person says 27, and you say, well, I know we all got different answers, but it's basically saying the same thing. We all agree. That doesn't even make logical sense at all. They're all wrong. Let's look at how evolutionists do this. This is known as the anomaly factor. Scientists have tried to eliminate it, but they have been unsuccessful. They try to get all on the same page. There's rock paintings in the South African brush found in 1991 that were dated by Oxford's University's radiocarbon accelerator at 1,200 years old. But they're actually painted by an art class only a few years before. They said, oh, Oxford, I painted those. I was four. Volcanic rocks in Hawaii, volcanoes that we've been able to observe developing. You know, volcano explodes, cools, they take the rock. Well, then they go date those at 160 million to 3 billion years old. We're talking rocks that formed within our lifetimes. I feel old sometimes, but I don't think I've ever even felt 3 billion years old. Well, they were actually formed by an eruption in 1801, those specific ones. But they've studied some others that are even more recent rocks at the Mount. I even Googled how to pronounce this, but I'm not going to attempt this. But it's a volcano in New Zealand. Were dated at 270,000 to 3.5 million years. But they were actually formed between 1949 and 1976. That's not that long ago. Observe that these dates provided by radiometric dating differ by 3 million years. What were those? They said, well, these rocks are somewhere between 270,000 and 3.5 million. So it's over a 3 million year difference. Now, I don't know if anybody worked for the government, but I went to school and we had a professor that worked for the government that always used to say, close enough for government work. And I don't think that's a good thing. I think it is something that leaves the door for wide open for error. But 3 million years is a lot of error, a lot of uncertainty. Louis Leakey's skull here was dated to be 1.75 million years by the potassium argon method, and at 10,000 years by the carbon 14 method. So he found a skull by the same formula, potassium to argon, and the carbon 14 to carbon 12 method. There's a range of 1.75 million to 10,000 years. There's a layer of volcanic ash at Lake Turkana in Kenya that was dated by three different teams. This wasn't a creationist team and an evolutionist. These were all three evolutionists. And the results varied from 500,000 years of old volcanic ash to 17.5 million years of old volcanic ash. Dr. Steve Austin, a member of the RATE Project, R-A-T-E, that we mentioned earlier, there's those two volumes I would recommend if you want a deeper study, had samples tested from the alleged oldest and youngest strata of the Grand Canyon. As many of us know, some of us ran into some evolutionists recently, they're going to say that all of these layers of rocks are varying ages of rock. That there's a layer of rock that is the very oldest. That's billions of years. And then there's layers of rocks that are maybe just hundreds or thousands of years old. Well, he took a layer, a sample from the oldest and the youngest stratas, and he used this dating method, which is supposed to be infallible. The oldest rocks were dated to 1.07 billion years, while the youngest were dated to 1.34 billion years. They were older, according to this evolutionist dating method. Thus, the infallible dating method here says that the youngest strata is 270 million years older than the oldest strata. Now, they didn't change their textbooks. You go to the Grand Canyon today, you can go to a nice visitor center, and they will explain to you that those are the old areas of rock, and that's the youngest. They didn't change what they believed. It's willful ignorance. Another great study here, rocks from the Beartooth Mountains in Wyoming ranged from 1.5 to 2.6 billion years. That's a difference of more than a billion years in the same mountain. So a mountain formed over a billion years. It just doesn't make sense. Dating methods that are wildly variable and contradictory surely lack real scientific authority. Real scientific authority. They want to come across as the authority. They are as the teenage boys ran into, professor. They're the wise ones. They're the brilliant ones. They're the ones, well, I believe in science. You're just a fool who believes the Bible. Your intellect doesn't match up to mine. Actually, their theory doesn't even match up to science. Number four, evolutionists are highly selective in choosing dates. Evolutionists are highly selective in choosing dates. Typically, they select dates that they prefer while ignoring ones that they find unacceptable. Dating methods for a young earth are always ignored. When there's a dating method that comes back and it doesn't fit their presupposed idea, they say, oh, well, we're not going to talk about that one. Shattering Myths of Darwinism by Richard Milton. He's quoted to say, science has proposed many methods of basically means dating rocks. But of these, only one, that of radioactive decay of uranium and similar elements, yields an age for the Earth of billions of years. This is the one method that has been enthusiastically promoted, while other methods have been neglected. There are powerful professional pressure on scientists to conform to a consensus. The published dating figures always conform to the preconceived dates and never contradict those dates. I guess I was on the wrong thing. In general, dates in the correct ballpark, quote, correct ballpark, are assumed to be correct and are published. But those that disagree with other data are seldom published, nor the discrepancies fully explained. If all these rejected dates were retrieved from the wastebasket and added to the published dates, the combined results would show that the dates produced are the scatter that one would expect by chance alone. So basically what they're doing is they're doing all this testing and they're trying to prove it by all these dating methods of rocks and organic material. And it's just as if you just scatter dates across. Like, this is saying it's this many years old. This is saying, and so they go to these scattered evidence and they say, this one works for me. And they plug that in and they ignore the ones that don't work. And then they'll go, well, that one works for that. And they'll hand select the dates that work for them. Ian Taylor, an engineer, he wrote in the Minds of Men, Darwin and the New World Order, said none of this is mentioned in popular magazines and textbooks, and the impression is left in the reader's mind that absolute chronology has been established by the radiocarbon method. You won't hear any of these fallacies, of course, in any of these textbooks. They're not going to say, well, there's this theory, but, you know, there's also a lot of other dates that are mentioned. No, they pick what they want. They choose the dates that work according to their own presupposed ideas and already conclusions they already came to, and then they publish it as fact. Number five, most dating methods point to a young Earth. a young earth. And there's a book called In the Beginning by Walt Brown. He is a PhD in mechanical engineering from MIT, and he lists 22 dating methods that point to a young earth. Back to Dr. Snelling, and his PhD is in geology, and he lists several dating methods that also point to a young earth. We're going to list some following questions here by Mark Caldwater. He was a chemical engineer, and he asks, he says, why do the oldest trees happen to be just a few thousand years old? We have very, very, very old trees that are only a few thousand years old. Well, because only a few thousand years ago there was a worldwide flood. That's an easy answer. Why is there so little helium in the atmosphere if such a quickly diffusing gas is escaping from rocks at high rates? If the world was billions of years old at the rate of helium coming into our atmosphere, we should all be talking like we're talking on helium. Why are the radioactive halos preserved in granite rocks from elements with half-lives of only several minutes? Also, why do polystrate fossils pierce through so many different layers of supposed geologic time? He goes on to ask questions like, why are carbon-14 dating measurements continually finding mere thousands of years for fossilized trees? Fossilized trees. We know that the process of fossilization came about by a catastrophic occurrence, the flood. The evolutionist explanation for fossilization is a long, long, long time. Pressure over a long time. We believe a lot of pressure in a short period of time. They believe pressure over a long period of time. But carbon dating for fossilized trees are showing just a few thousand years old. Also, why is carbon-14 being found in some diamonds and coal in which all radioactive carbon should be long gone? We already talked about this. Because they're supposed to be millions of years old. Also, why are many gas and oil reservoirs under such high pressure so that they become gushers and flow out of their own accord when rock porously and permeably and cracks are all around to relieve pressure over the supposed millions of years? They're under all this pressure. You think they would have poured out after a while if they really were there for millions of years. Also, why is the Earth's magnetic field decaying so rapidly and extrapolating backwards to levels that would be destabilizing within approximately 10,000 years? So basically, the Earth's magnetic field is getting worse every year. The moon is getting a few inches further from us every year. It's about 3 inches and every year. So life would cease to be able to be supported on Earth in 10,000 years. That's not explained by their dating methods. Why do we see so many comets in our solar system, since the comet trails are evidence of their volatile material boiling away as they pass by the sun? They should have all been consumed by now if the solar system is billions of years old. Also, why haven't our continents eroded to nearly flat? I mean, we live in a great proof of that. My wife comes from the flat part of the country. Originally, I have to say I also come from the flat part of the country in Indiana. But we have mountains, and we can measure erosion. Why aren't the mountains gone? Why haven't things just washed flat? Also, why haven't the oceans accumulated sediment thousands of feet deep if the Earth is really billions of years old? Dr. David Stone, PhD in physics, he said, the observations cited in the questions above are all affirmative evidence for a young Earth. Evolutionists will always come up with stories to try to explain away the simple, direct implications of these observations. You say, oh, those are just observations. Well, what is science? Observation. It's up to you to discern between stories and evidence. Be careful with evolutionists, they will spin very convincing stories and fables. It's just that. They also do a really good job at coloring pictures. Be careful of drawings and pictures, because they can draw very convincing art pieces, and they better not put them in the Louvre, they'll get stolen. If you caught the news this week, about a year ago, they put we're all proud about their DEI hired the first woman head of security at the Louvre. And this last week, the crown jewels of France were stolen from the Louvre. They put a ladder right up on the side of the building, broke a window, got them and ran out. Our world is something. Lastly, number six, biomaterials in ancient fossils point to a young Earth. What explains the existence of biomaterials in soft tissue and fossils that are allegedly millions of years old? The evolutionists can't answer that question. Researchers have uncovered biological molecules like proteins, DNA, and pigments from fossils that are supposedly millions of years old. Laboratory studies indicate that they will not only survive thousands, they will not only survive thousands, sorry, my dyslexia is acting up, indicate that they will only survive thousands, not millions of years. This is by Brian Thomas, Acts and Facts, 2009. We get those magazines here at the church. With that, they've been able to pull enough DNA evidence from some of these extinct fossils, literally, to then cross and bring back a wolf species of sorts that didn't exist, but it was extinct. What do they call it? The dire wolf, I think. A mastosaur fossil at the Dinosaur Institute in Los Angeles, supposedly millions of years old, has retina pigment, dried blood residue, and preservation of skin structures from parts of the body. I have a tooth from a fossilized tooth from one of these fossils. But they find these fossils, and there's dried blood. There's all of these different things that they're finding that wouldn't be there if this fossil was actually millions of years old. In 2005, Mary Schweitzer and colleagues published a paper in Science magazine describing the presence of soft tissue in the fossilized femur of a T-Rex unearthed in Montana. This was in June of 2006. 2009, researchers constructed dried ink from a quote-unquote 150-million-year-old fossil squid ink sac. They used it to draw a picture of the squid. So it's 150 million years old, long enough that there shouldn't have been anything in there. But there was actually ink inside of the ink sac of that fossilized squid. They used it to draw the squid. 2008, BBC News reported on fossil feathers that retained their pigmentation and colors. Professor Mike Benton asked, how do you square that with the well-known fact that the majority of organic molecules decay in just in thousands of years? Every single one of these, we can go through and say, hey, it doesn't match up to millions of years, but it makes sense that it's round because it does take time. It takes thousands of years. And we believe the earth is thousands of years old. Reminds of the joke about a man who thought he was dead. A psychologist who was trying to talk him out of this idea, he asked, do dead men bleed? The man replied, no. And the psychologist leaned over and pricked him with a needle, and he started bleeding. What do you think now? The psychologist asked. The persistent man exclaimed, I guess dead men do bleed. That was supposed to be funny. It wasn't. When confronted with the fact that biomaterial has been found in fossils that are supposed to be millions of years old, even though it is known that the biomaterial does not survive that long, the same scientist that will say that this squid was millions of years old will also tell you that biomaterial they found in it and wrote with from inside of it does not last and will not survive for millions of years. Evolutionists do not give up their theory. Instead, they claim biomaterial does last millions of years. I did find in looking at some of this research, times where in the same textbook, They say it does, and they say it doesn't. When it suited them well, the same author wrote that biomaterial. We can tell this is this old because there's no biomaterial there. And then it says, well, because we found biomaterial in this 150-year-old, million-year-old fossil, then we know that biomaterial does last for millions of years. I want to, in closing, I was really worked hard to try to keep it down on time and not go 30 minutes over tonight. But there's some resources. If you want to look into further study, like I said, I'm not going to be able to flesh out all of the information, all of the details. We just don't have the time. It's already after 8 o'clock, and we just talked about the age of the earth. I try to be concise. I try to give you information, but there's so much more out there. These are some of the pieces of information that I looked at. There's the rate studies here, the summary of the research done by that team of 8 PhD scientists, volumes 1 and 2. Anders Snelling's book here, Earth's Catastrophic Past, Thousands, Not Billions, by Don DeYoung. And then Russell Humphrey's Starlight and Time, and then Taking Back Astronomy by Jason Lyle, and Danny Faulkner's Universe by Design. And then there's several more, Young Earth in the Beginning. And so there's several there that I would recommend. Another one that I would recommend is, I won't turn that off, is if you want a concise, I say concise, is that book I gave you the other day small? Reggie? No. How many pages is it? It's like 500 or 600 pages. There's a book, and there's one in the library. I let Reggie borrow one of my personal copies. I have a couple copies, and it's by David Cloud, and he has put together some great resource materials. He's put together some great resource materials on this topic, and I've used his resource materials for a lot of my study as well. That, though, takes a lot of what some of these guys wrote and breaks it down a little bit smaller. Like I said, small is 600 or 700 pages. Seeing the non-existent, the battle between the creation and evolution. We will continue, and I'm going to continue and working through, but I'd like to get to the conclusion within the next few weeks of this aspect of our study and move toward, I think we're going to take a break and have another series, and then from another individual, and then we're going to move toward the biblical account, apologetics and biblical account of the flood.